by our church relations office has specified that we also, this is not a commercial for Pepperdine University, so you can rest at ease if your heart lies in Searcy or Abilene or somewhere else. My wife and I are both graduates of Abilene Christian University, and I do have been teaching at Pepperdine for 10 years. So I have a long commitment to and a great appreciation for Christian higher education wherever it may happen. I do want to let you know, for those of you that are considering where to go to college and or where to send your children for college, that Pepperdine does take this this term Christian education very seriously. Pepperdine is a Christian university, as we like to say in our mission statement, committed to the highest standards of academic excellence and Christian values, where students are prepared for lives of purpose, service, and leadership. And we try to weave that mission into all of the different things that we do. Now, I can't help but do a little bit of a commercial for Pepperdine University. And even though, as I said, Renee and I did graduate from Abilene Christian University, you may not realize that Pepperdine is the only university connected with Churches of Christ that is considered to be a national university by the U.S. News and World Report rankings. All the others are considered regional schools. You may not realize that in the 2013 rankings that Pepperdine stands at number 54 in the nation. So that does put us behind Harvard and Princeton, who are tied for first. It does put us behind Stanford. It does put us behind UC Santa Barbara. But it does put us ahead of Texas A&M, of Southern Methodist University, where I graduated with my PhD. It puts us in some pretty good company up there. Okay, I also want to offer a brief commercial for the Pepperdine Lectures. And I think I have a slide that even advertises that. Is my remote clicker active? There we go. April 30 to May 3rd this year, and there are some program books, if you want more information about this, out in the foyer on the tables on either side of the central doors. Our theme this year is, Can I Get a Witness? Faithfully Following the Lamb in Revelation. So if you have any interest at all in an in-depth study of the book of Revelation, and there will be many, many other topics, there are something like 22 plus classes going on at each of the slots during the day, so you can always find something that will be of interest to you. And finally, before I move on from the commercial phase, sorry, I should say that if you wish to pre-register, the URL is pepperdine.edu/Bible Lectures. And finally, in the vein of commercials, if you are a high school student and you would like more information about spiritual life, including scholarships at Pepperdine, I would be glad to leave one of these brochures with you. They are not just sitting out around, but if you'll see me for one, I'd be glad to leave that with you. Okay. And now, if we can direct our attention back to Matthew chapter 13. You heard Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 through 52, read a few minutes ago. And I have found this to be a very intriguing text. As we proceed through the sermon today, I will be exploring with you the whole chapter of Matthew 13. But starting here at the end, with these parables about the treasure and the pearl. Now, I grew up in Churches of Christ. I was attending Sunday school from the time I could come home from the hospital. So I've heard these parables before. And so when you get to the end of that reading and Jesus says, have you understood all this? Well, I thought, sure, I've understood all this. I mean, I've heard sermons about this. I've been in Sunday school. I understand all this. From my childhood exposure to these parables, from the teaching I heard in classrooms and in the pulpit, I knew that what these parables about the merchant who finds a treasure hidden in a field and sells all that he has to buy that field, Or the man in search of pearls who finds that one very precious pearl and sells everything he has to be able to get that precious pearl. I understood that what those parables told me was that I needed to be willing to give up everything I had in order to be part of the kingdom of heaven. That whatever I might treasure on earth, it was not as valuable as my entrance into the kingdom of heaven. And so, I would have said, sure, I understand this, Jesus. I understand that the price of admission to the kingdom of heaven is everything that I have. But see, then I grew up. And I came to realize that this was not possible. That I can't do what I thought I was supposed to do. That in these parables, the merchant and the man in search of pearls, they're not just willing to give up what they have to purchase their treasure or their pearl. They actually do it, actually go through with it. It's not just willingness, it's actually paying the price. And it's getting enough return on that, whatever you sell, it's getting enough return on that to be able to afford the field or the pearl in the marketplace. But see, here's the problem. I don't have anything that's worth that much. Nothing I can give or give up will buy or will merit my admission into the kingdom of heaven. I can't make enough of selling me to do that. Now, my wife and children are here with me today, and they can tell you just how worthless I really am. But let's try a little thought experiment here and pretend like I'm better than is really true. What if I suppose I were to devote my life to teaching and preaching the good news about Jesus? As it turns out, I really spend a large portion of my life teaching the good news from the Old Testament, where Jesus is there only in anticipation. But suppose I did that. Would that be enough? Would that be enough to merit my entrance into the kingdom of heaven? Would I have earned, I see a head shaking here, would I have earned my way into the kingdom of heaven? Okay, so you're telling me that's not good enough. All right, so suppose that I devote my life to teaching and preaching the good news about Jesus overseas in a land that's not my native country. How about that? Would that be enough? Would that get the job done? Would that earn? You're shaking your head at me. Okay, so that's not good enough. How about if I sell everything I own and give it all to the poor? Would that be enough? I see another one. What if I sell everything I have and give all my money to poor people who are overseas? Still not good enough? What if I shove a little old lady out of the path of an oncoming truck, giving my life for her so that she can land on the far corner with just a bad hip and I sacrifice my life to save her? How about that? Does that merit my entrance into the kingdom of heaven? And it's the same answer. How about if I smuggle Bibles into hostile territory and get martyred for the cause of bringing Christ to people in an oppressive government? No. No, see, this is the thing. Nothing I can do, pardon me, nothing I can do is good enough, is valuable enough, is worth enough, will yield enough revenue or profit for me to then buy admission into the kingdom of heaven. It just doesn't work. Nothing I can do is that valuable. Nothing I have is that precious. pardon me, and so confused, I go back to these parables in Matthew chapter 13 to see whether, in fact, I really have understood them. Now, I take some comfort from the fact that even Jesus' closest followers and friends, the apostles, had a hard time understanding these parables. And I apologize for the strange tone of my voice right now. I have been trying to fight off a cold. My wife has succumbed to that cold. I also had oral surgery earlier this week. So please forgive the coughing and the strange timbre in my voice. But I do take comfort from the fact that the apostles needed help as well. And so the parables, you know, they look so simple after Jesus explains them. Once Jesus tells you what they mean, you go, of course, that's what it means. So I think that maybe I could benefit from working from what Jesus explains to what Jesus doesn't explain. Now, by the way, this is an interesting chapter in Matthew where there's a whole collection of parables. I think it is unlikely that Jesus told these parables just as one shots and never used them again. How many preachers use their best sermons only once? Or their best material, their best illustration only once? So it seems likely that Jesus would have told these parables on perhaps on multiple occasions, but Matthew presents them here as a package deal, so I'm going to treat them as a package deal. Now, before we go back to the merchant, pardon me, the treasure and the pearl, let's consider one of them that Jesus explicitly explains earlier in the chapter, the parable of the wheat and the weeds. Right, and now I'm going to be using a little chart up here. I'm sorry, this is a professional hazard, an occupational hazard. I have to use charts, graphs, diagrams, and so on because I am a professor. So Matthew chapter 13, verses 24 to 30, Jesus tells a parable where he says, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field, but while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also, and the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, 'Master, didn't you sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds?' He said to them, 'An enemy did this.' So the servants said to him, 'Do you want us to go and gather them?' But he said, 'No, because in gathering the weeds, you might root up the wheat along with them. So let both grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first, and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.' Thank you kindly, sir." If just a cup of water I place within your hand and all that. Thank you so much. All right, now Jesus will, in a few verses, explain this parable to his apostles. They will say to him, "Explain to us, Jesus, explain the parable of the field," in chapter, in verse 36. And so Jesus says to them, "The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man." That's one of Jesus' preferred titles for himself. You may know that already. "The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed stands for the people of the kingdom. The weeds are the people of the evil one, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels." Okay, so the one who sows the seed is the Son of Man. The harvesters are angels. And the weeds, the plants, the weeds and the wheat represent human beings. You and me and others who have grown in this field. Now, let's leave that in our minds for a moment and look at another parable in this chapter that Jesus explicitly explains, and that would be the one at the very beginning, probably one of the more familiar ones, the parable. I'm going to call it, because the screen is not very wide from right to left, I'm going to call it the parable of the soils, although Jesus calls it the parable of the sower, but sower really crowded my line right there, so parable of the soils. You know this one probably. A farmer went out to sow his seed, and as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop of 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear, which is, in case you don't know, that's Jesus's way of saying, get it? Now, the crowd doesn't really get it, and the apostles don't get it, and they have to ask later, what does this mean? So, starting in verse 18, Jesus will explain it to them. Listen to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy, but since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop, yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. Now, Jesus makes it clear here again that the metaphor of plants in this first parable, the plants are people. Plants stand for you and me and all who hear the word and respond in various ways. And I think it's not much of a stretch, although Jesus doesn't say this, come right out and say this, but I think it's not much of a stretch to see that Jesus is the one who sows the seed, just as he is in the other parable about somebody who goes out and sows the seed a few verses later. Okay? So we have two parables that Jesus has explicitly explained to us. And then we get another one, which comes right after the parable of the treasure and the parable of the pearl. So consider with me again, then, the parable of the fishes. This comes in verse 47, if you are following in your own Bible. Verse 47, you heard this read earlier, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into a lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on shore. They sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw the bad away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, this one is, again, easy to understand because Jesus explains it. He tells us what the symbols mean. The fishermen in this parable represent the angels who will sort out the righteous and the wicked humans at the end of the age. So the fishermen are angels, and the fish are you and me and all who will be judged. And Jesus says in verse 51, have you understood all these things? And I say, yeah, because you explained them. And that made it easy. So if we take these, I think one of the things that we professors do is look for patterns. I think all people look for patterns. Try to make sense of things using patterns. So as I have reflected on these parables and realized that what I thought I understood as a child about the treasure and the pearl, that there was something wrong with that because I was putting myself in an impossible position, kind of this weird combination of arrogance and futility, of thinking that I could sell something and buy my way into the kingdom of heaven. So if I look at all of these together, I think an interesting pattern emerges. So in the parable of the treasure, as I understood it as a child, the man who went out searching for treasures was supposed to represent you and me, and the treasure that he found was supposed to represent the kingdom of heaven. And I hope you'll forgive me, this is about as close as I could get to a picture of heaven, a cloud with some sunshine. And in the parable of the pearl, I had been given to understand as a child that the man in search of pearls represented you and me and our quest in life, and the pearl represented the kingdom of heaven, which we were to try to acquire. But when you set that understanding in conversation with the other parables that Jesus explicitly interprets, that he explicitly explains, something unusual happens. Right? So the way I understood things as a youngster, in the parable of the soils, the sower was Jesus. In other words, the human character in the story represented the Son of Man, Jesus. So too with the parable of the wheat, where the owner was, the guy in charge, was the Son of Man, Jesus, sowing the seed, and the workers under him were the angels, and the wheat was people. When I got to the parable of the treasure and the pearl, I switched everything around, and the guy in charge, the main actor in the story, became me. And the object or the thing in the story that was being acted upon became heaven. And then in the fish, since Jesus tells us what to think about the fish, then I go back to the other way of thinking, where the object in the story, the fish, are people, and the humans within the story are heavenly beings, the angels. Now, you may be way ahead of me on this already, but as I look at a chart like this, in the parables that Jesus explains, human beings within the story always represent heavenly entities, angels or Jesus himself. And objects or things, plants, fish, represent human beings. Now, in the parables that Jesus did not explain, I, in my earlier life, had not followed Jesus' example in the way I was thinking about these parables. So what happens if we do think about the other parables in the same light as what Jesus has laid out for the ones Jesus did explain? See, things change a bit. If we follow Jesus' lead and we treat the human character in each parable as the Son of Man, Jesus himself, that means that from Jesus' point of view, these parables are not about what we do. They're about what Jesus does. And that means that you, all you people that were shaking your heads at me earlier, disproved, that every one of you is the treasure in the field. Every one of you is the pearl in the market. And Jesus is the one who has something that's good enough to sell in exchange for you. Jesus is the one who has something that is precious enough to give up to purchase the kingdom of heaven. And that kingdom is all of you. And that, I believe, is not just the message of these parables, but the message of the Gospels in a way as a whole. That Jesus redeems us through his death, through his offering of his own life on the cross. And I think the testimony of the New Testament is very consistent on this point. And so I think about, as I think about the bigger picture, I think about classic texts like Philippians chapter 2, beginning with verse 6, that Jesus, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking on the form of a servant, being born in human likeness, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. the result of which is, in verse 9, that therefore God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Jesus Christ is Lord. He is the King of this kingdom of heaven. And I think of, you know, one of the other occupational hazards of being a professor is you have to show that everybody agrees with you. So I think, you know, Paul, okay, so Paul supports this point. Now, let's have Peter support this point as well. I think of 1 Peter 3:18, which says that Christ suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit. That he might bring us to God through his death. And I think about one of my personal very favorite New Testament texts, Revelation chapter 5, verse 9, where the host gathered around the throne sings, "Worthy are you," speaking to the exalted Christ, "worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation, and you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth." And I take that to be an expression in worship of what Jesus has said kind of before the fact in these parables, that you, through Jesus' eyes, you are precious. So precious, so dear to Jesus, that he was willing to sacrifice his very life and more in order to incorporate you and me into his kingdom, the kingdom of heaven. Now, may I switch analogies for just one final moment? See, because there's something else that this parable implies, that this set of parables implies, that doesn't always match up with our lived experience. And that is, you see, what these parables and the other texts tell us is that Jesus already has paid this price. There's no negotiation. This is done. This is a done deal. The contract's been signed. You belong to Jesus. Everybody else does too. Period. But now I'm going to switch metaphors from treasures and pearls, which I don't have a lot of experience with, to automobiles. Okay. Many of you have had the experience of purchasing a car. So you know that there can be a delay between the time you sign the contract to buy the car and the time you actually get the car from the dealer. They have to make it ready and all that stuff, or maybe bring it from the factory if you bought a Saturn or whatever. In the same way, Jesus has already paid the price to buy you, me, everyone for the kingdom of God. Jesus has paid the price of our admission. But sometimes we can be stubborn. Sometimes we can be junkers, clunkers, lemons. Sometimes we may run off the road. Sometimes we may be broken down on the side of the highway waiting for gas. There may be some reason why Jesus, although he holds the title to your life, doesn't drive you every day, so to speak. I know, it's a weird metaphor. But there may be some reason why Jesus doesn't have complete control over your life. Let me urge you to open the door, so to speak, to your true owner. Maybe you're still sitting on the lot. You haven't made that commitment to Jesus. You've been paid for, but Jesus hasn't taken delivery yet. Let me urge you to offer yourself to Jesus so that he can take delivery of your life. Jesus owns us all. Jesus is our Lord. This is true whether we recognize and cooperate with it or not. But I do want to urge you, as I want to urge myself, to make sure that that ownership becomes reality in the way we live our lives. If there's some way that this church can help you to make that true in your life, if you need to be reconnected with Jesus, let me invite you to come and make that need known to the church as we stand and sing the invitation.